Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is the Steve Austin Show. Unleashed.
Right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. Sitting here in my office at 316 Gimmick Street, looking over here at the courtyard. As I record to open this podcast, it is Wednesday afternoon, about 10 minutes till 1 o'clock. My yard guys have already come and gone and blowed and mowed the yard, so you will be hearing no distractions from the yard guys. I thought I was up and at them early, going to beat them to the punch. I had to wait for them to leave. It was unbelievable. So anyway, I got that going for me. Hey, man, I've been getting a lot of emails to questions at SteveAustinShow.com and also a couple of tweets on my Twitter account, SteveAustinBSR. You guys have been asking me, hey, man, did you ever go pick up your free Toyota Prius that you won in that giveaway? Remember, I had the choice of getting a Toyota Prius or $30,000 in cash. But the catch was, you had to go listen to a PowerPoint presentation on, what it called? On timeshares.
For 90 minutes.
For 90 minutes. You had to go listen to a pitch about timeshares. So anyway, my wife decided she was going to go up there, put in the 90 minutes, go to the PowerPoint presentation to be able to claim either the Toyota Prius, the $30,000 in cash, the big screen TV, the Apple iPad thing, or some other kind of lame-ass thing.
A cruise,
yeah, that's right, a seven-day cruise. We don't go on cruises. Anyway, my wife got all dressed up. She's ready to go down to the PowerPoint presentation. I said, man, you ain't going to no PowerPoint presentation. She says, why not? I said, I think it's a gimmick. I think it's a work. Maybe it's unsafe. I was concerned about your safety, Kristen. How do you think about that? Kristen, I got a microphone plugged in. You might as well pick a damn microphone up. Hey, I thought it was a work from the get-go.
I'm busy voting, by the way.
How's the voting process going?
Long.
Man, I tell you what, they give us a couple of manuals over here. You just thumb through them, I guess, right, Kristen? And
yeah, because I signed up for the absentee ballot or the mail-in ballot, whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because it gives me more time to think about things. So when you go to the polling place, you feel rushed, and I never could figure out how to use those hole puncher things.
So what do you got to do? Are you just filling in blanks? Are you coloring circles or what?
Yeah, I'm coloring circles like I'm taking a test on a Scantron. Was that what we did?
Yeah, it was Scantron.
Yeah.
Hey, did you come up on Prop 64 yet, legalized marijuana?
Yes, I did, and I'm not telling you what I voted.
Oh, come on. I think I'm going to vote to legalize marijuana.
Okay, good for you.
Okay, so what'd you pick?
I'm not telling you.
Oh, come on, Kristen. God damn it, you're my wife. Nobody listens to this podcast.
Nobody?
I'm just kidding.
It's an award-winning podcast.
Well, that's an award-winning podcast. It never won a goddamn award, but people all over the world listen to this podcast. Hey, I had a couple of stories to
You didn't finish my gift?
Oh, yeah. So what happened?
Well, you wouldn't let me go, so I couldn't find out. So now I get 3 phone calls a day from the timeshare people asking me why. Wait, first it was, call us back to reschedule. Then the next message was, you forgot your gift. I'm like thinking, all right, so they want me to call back, so I'm going to reschedule again because I forgot my gift. I didn't forget the gift. And then they keep calling with a new message trying to entice me to calling back, so I just keep blocking their numbers.
I can't believe that they'd be so anxious to give away a Toyota Prius. I just think they want to do the PowerPoint presentation, try to get you hooked up on a timeshare, and just get out of Dodge.
I mean, I imagine people that go to that, because I think a lot of people do timeshares. I know our neighbors do. But I've never done a timeshare. I don't even know what a timeshare is. I guess I do know what a timeshare is. I shouldn't say that. I guess I'm not interested in a timeshare.
Well, people, every time I ask someone about a timeshare, they always act like it's free. You got to pay in some money so you get your damn time out of the timeshare. So they just always say when they go on a trip, oh, we have a timeshare.
Yeah.
Like they're pulling out the ace card. Well, you had to pay for the motherfucker. It ain't free.
No, it's not free.
Yeah. A bunch of other people using it.
You've got to share it.
It's a goddamn hotel. I don't know if it's worth it or not. Normally when I'm going to interview someone on the Steve Austin Show podcast, I do shitloads of research. I didn't really know that I was going to be talking about timeshares today other than bringing up the story, so I can't give you a whole lot of timeshare background. Although I do have my computer right here in front of me, I'm not going to Google in timeshare and how the fuck it works just so I can explain to you at the podcast when you've got better things to do. You're driving to work, you're coming back from work, you're just trying to chill out. You don't need me to go into a tutorial on timeshares, or do you? Okay, I'm typing in timeshare right now. I'm kidding. So anyway, Chris and I went to Reno, Nevada the other day. Had to make an appearance and do a business meeting. And so, you know, we were kind of in a hurry because it was a short trip. It was a very short trip. It was like basically in Reno and out of Reno. So I tell you what, man, we're going to the airport. We're packed up. We just got one bag. Kristen has a purse. I got a backpack. And before we got out of the cab, I told my wife, I said, remind me to take my pocket knife out of my pocket and put it in my luggage so we can check it so I don't get it taken from me, because I've lost way too many knives that way. And I was carrying...
You didn't lose it.
Do what?
You don't lose knives. You give them away
to
the airport security.
I was carrying my coveted OD Green Broken Skull cold steel knife in my right pocket. And so anyway, we get there. Chris reminds me. I put the knife into the bag, and we get checked. We go through the pre-check on the TSA thing.
But you forgot about our cab ride to the airport.
Oh, man. How could I forget about that? I was just rambling right along there. Holy smokes. This guy, we're in a van. There's two cab rides. The cab ride to the airport and the cab ride home. Okay, so we're going to the airport. The first guy picks us up in a van. Throw all our stuff in. Get in. On the way, LAX is only 6 miles from our house. Somehow, some way, there was some dude on a Harley Davidson motorcycle. Looked like it was homemade because he had written Harley Davidson on the side of the gas tank. So I don't know if it was a real Harley Davidson or not. But anyway, evidently, we're facing forward. So our cab driver changed lanes and, I guess, in the process, cut the guy on the motorcycle off.
That's the only thing I could think of.
Because, man, here comes this guy. Again, we're not looking behind us. And here comes this guy rolling right beside our driver. Hey, you stupid motherfucker. God damn it. Revving up his motorcycle. Pull over, you stupid motherfucker. See what you did? Pull over, God damn it. Pull over. And me and Chris are just kind of sitting there like, we're almost guilty by proxy because our driver cut off the motorcycle guy with the home-written Harley Davidson logo on the gas tank. So I don't know if he cut him off or not because I can't see. And then on one hand, I can't defend the driver because I don't want to get in an argument with the guy on the motorcycle.
He probably did cut him off.
God damn. Well, he followed us for 3 miles.
Screaming at us the whole time.
Every time we stopped at a red light, you stupid motherfucker, pull it over, pull it over. I'm like, God damn, I had to toss him, come up on my Xanax out of my backpack. Here, take two of these and chill, brother.
Well, then the cab driver started driving really quickly and trying to outrun him, and I'm really going into a panic.
The cab driver's just trying to kayfabe. It's like you got the blinders on. You know when you cut somebody off, you know, they don't want to look at you or whatever. So and he says real quietly, shut up. Guy been cussing him like a sailor for fucking almost 3 miles and just says, shut up.
And then what are we supposed to do? Just sit there?
So we just sit there and I was like, God damn, he's going to follow us to the curb and he's going to start beating the taxi driver's ass. So anyway, finally he trailed off. I actually think someone else cut him off. So he started yelling at a different car. Good motherfucking road rage out there. But I was like, God damn, I'll be goddamn if this guy's going to follow us to the airport. Like, man, help me with the bags or something. You know, I'm trying to take care of my driver. Maybe I can get out of paying the cab fee because the guy on the motorcycle was beating up the cab driver. God damn
it. We got to the airport much quicker, though.
That was one of the quickest trips to the airport we've ever had. maybe he just left the motorcycle driver in the trail or something. God damn. So anyway, we get out to Reno.
You forgot about the lady that forgot her jacket.
Oh, man.
We were already running late for the airport, and then we get in the line, and we're waiting, and it's the longest wait, because we're the only ones there.
Well, and there's two people checking in front of us because both the attendants are working with them. And the one dude's changing his travel plan, so this is taking like 30 minutes. And like, you know, we got to the airport late because I had to go do a meeting before I got onto the at NFL.com and do some TV stuff. So we missed our early flight, so we took his late flight. The guy's trying to change his flight up at the counter, and then the other lady's got about 30 bags and trying to check all 30 bags onto the goddamn thing. I'm like, where in the fuck is this lady going, all these bags? It must be a while, or she packs real heavy. And so we're standing there. We're next in line. And I know that if we don't get on the airplane here pretty quick, and this is one of those American Airlines deals at LAX, you got a shuttle and a bus for about 5 minutes to get to the other terminal.
With 50 other people.
With 50 other people. I guarantee you packed in there like a sardine. These days, if I ever roll open a can of sardines, I look at the sardines and said, I know how you feel. I've been there on that fucking bus. So anyway, we're waiting to try to get our tickets and get on the damn tram on the bus to get over to the airplane so we don't miss our flight.
And go through security.
Go through security, the whole nine yards. I done took my pocket knife out and put it in my damn check-on bag. And here comes this lady from behind us. And then she kind of gets beside us. And then she kind of gets in front of us. And while the lady is still checking in, the lady with the 30 bags, she walks up to the lady and says, what'd she say?
I forgot my jacket on the plane.
I'm thinking, goddamn. I said, I'm a global icon and national treasure. I got my wonderful wife, Kristen. I'm trying to make a flight to fucking Reno. And now this lady cuts line and jumps up there and starts asking the lady while she's checking in, the lady with the 30 bags to go in somewhere, that she forgot her fucking jacket on the airplane.
And now it's everybody's problem.
Why don't you just turn around, do a U-turn, and run back to the airplane? Yeah, that's what I've always done when I forget shit on the airplane. And or you... it means I've lost it.
Right. Get a new jacket then.
Yeah, I love so many damn books in the back of the seat in front of you. You know, the little book things where you
and
get
headsets.
Your magazine, headsets, telephones, all kinds of bullshit. So now she just sees fit. And she never says, excuse me, thank you, I'm sorry, but just jumped in front of us. And I was in one of those moods where I just come from NFL.com and there was a lot of insider talk going on, so I didn't have my wits about me. And I didn't want to call the lady out in public, you know, but I was like, hey, I got a camouflage pair of shorts on, but do you not see us here? We're next in line.
I would have given her my jacket.
Damn, if it means that much to you, son of a bitch.
It must have been some super fancy jacket.
Well, people, when they travel, just say they got no goddamn manners or etiquette anymore.
And that does seem to be the case,
she
actually.
She could have just said thank you, or I'm sorry, or whatever.
Or do you mind?
Anyway, so we go to Reno, and then, goddamn... we didn't get to the fucking airport, and I got my cold steel broken skull knife.
Oh, you're talking about on the trip back.
On the way back. We're in Reno, and we're about to try to get on a flight back to L.A., and I forgot I had my broken skull pocket knife in my pocket. And I'm like, man, they done checked our bags. There's not a place to mail the damn knife
back.
No,
there was. She said they had that option. But
there was?
Yeah, you didn't want me to go do that.
Well, I didn't want you to go do it. We're about to miss this flight
right.
as well.
Yeah.
So we're in a damn hurry.
Because
anyway,
we had so much time to kill that we sat at the stupid restaurant for 3 hours. And then we ended up not having enough time to mail your knife back.
Well, you know, I figured, you know what? If you stick the knife between two computers, maybe it won't get picked up.
Well, that didn't work.
I go through the line, and we're going to the TSA pre-check line. And so all of a sudden, the damn belt underneath that little examining machine is moving pretty quickly. And I'm thinking, I might get away with getting my knife through. And then the lady pulls the backpack out.
Oh.
Re-scans it. Says, whose backpack? It says, mine. You need to come with me. Well, I went with her. And she said, we need another security over here. Need a pat-down.
No, she did that little...
Yeah, she puts that little paper swab on that stick, and then she scraped it around on the inside of my backpack. And she said, there's also been some explosives in here, or ammunition, gunpowder. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. This is my go-to backpack that I do everything with.
Yeah.
So anyway, they take my broken skull, OD green pocket knife out, put it on the table, say, don't go into your backpack at any time during the search. I said, I'm fine with that. And she said, have you been carrying ammunition? I said, yeah, I was at the shooting range the other day, and I put my bullets inside my backpack. I said, that's what you're getting. So anyway, she was cool with that. They took my knife, and she gave me one more option. She goes, do you want to go mail this knife to yourself? I said, not right now, so I'm going to miss my plane. I said, can you keep it? It's a really good pocket knife. You can get it for $75 on Amazon using one of my links, Steve Austin Show. Just go to podcast1.com.
Okay.
Anyway, so she goes, no, I just got to throw it away. And I watched her make her trip over to the trash can.
Full of pocket knives, too.
That brand new pocket knife I just sharpened up. And she puts it in the trash can. And I lost my cold steel broken skull knife.
But I ordered 5 more on Amazon for
you. Got 5 more on Amazon, and we used our link, so they didn't charge us anything extra, and it helps pay the production costs over at Podcast One.
We're doing our part.
So anyway, the guy comes over to pat me down, and, you know, just because, you know, I had some ammunition in my backpack, or I had some ammunition remains, some gunpowder residue.
Yeah, residue.
Man, that little white swab gimmick really picked it up. And don't ever do this. And, you know, fuck, I made the mistake of trying to sneak that pocket knife on board. Shit, they busted me cleaner. It just was what it was. But I just couldn't voluntarily throw that pocket knife away, Kristen. I've done that before. And
you've,
you know,
done
places.
It many times.
A lot of times I'll just walk up to someone and say, hey, man, you want a pocket knife? Because I hate to do the mail.
Then they're going to have to throw it out.
No, if they're not getting on a flight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I've given away a couple of them like that. But anyway, so I lost my pocket knife, got patted down. Shit, I damn near needed a cigarette after the pat down. It was ridiculous.
I was quite irritated.
My wife was behind me, and she was in a real foul mood. I'm like, what are you in a bad mood for? You're not the one who just lost a badass pocket knife.
You're the one who forgot.
I said, as soon as I remembered that I had that knife in my pocket, I said, man, I said, I might as well just throw it in the trash. And you said, no, stick it between your computers.
I didn't say that.
That was your idea.
No.
It was your idea.
Well, I am cheap.
Kristen, you're the one who put me in harm's way. I wasn't going to admit that it was your idea.
Now, next time we go through TSA, they're going to be on to us.
Man, but I tell you what, now everybody's TSA. It used to be like the gimmick that, you know, no one would ever
do. The TSA pre-check.
Yeah, TSA pre-check. Yeah, that way you just kind of just throw your shit on the belt and go through.
Yeah, now the line's longer for TSA pre-check than it is a regular line.
Yeah, so now it doesn't pay to have TSA pre-check. Now you're just going to go back to the regular everyday travel line. Well, Kristen, I've got an interesting show today. Questions at steveaustinshow.com was the email address I sent out to people, and they've asked a bunch of questions. So I'm going to fire up the computer and start answering questions. Anything else going on in your life that's extremely important other than the fact that you're doing your online voting?
Not online voting.
What is it called? Oh, you just filling out the manual.
Yeah.
So then you mail that in?
Yeah.
And so they're going to count all the votes?
I hope so.
There, a lot of people have been talking about there could be some scams going on during the election process of people getting votes thrown out or too many votes counted, unfair, whatever it is. Do you follow any of that?
No.
Do you think your vote is going to be processed in a proper way?
I hope so. But there's always potential for, you know, rigging elections, I suppose.
Donald Trump thinks the election is rigged. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't have any thoughts on that.
Okay, who are you voting for? Trump,
I'm not telling.
All right, Kristen, thanks for joining me on the Open This Illustrious Podcast.
Mullah for president.
Who?
Mullah.
You know what?
I'm going to write in her candidate.
The candidate's a hand. Mullah wouldn't be a bad candidate to write in.
Yeah.
I know that there's something I got to do after I do this open. We got to take care of a little bit of business. And it turns out that business is going to be
killing this fly that's buzzing around us right now.
Oh, man. Speaking of killing flies, my bug assault gun works like a charm. I busted 2 flies this morning. I got 3 yesterday. I'm spending more money on salt because that's the ammunition that's used for the bug assault gun. But that thing has been a blast. It's like I'm dove hunting in Texas with Ted Fowler 361.
Yeah.
And I don't need a bird dog to pick up the flies.
We do need to have a device that helps you pick up the flies because you keep using all the Kleenex to pick up the dead flies.
Oh, I know. I got tons of dead flies right here. I got to get one of those gimmick things. You squeeze it, and it's the end of a stick, and you pick the fly up.
Oh, yeah.
But those things, the flies.
A fly pincher.
A fly pincher. You heard it here first, folks. A fly pincher.
We are actually inviting flies into our home.
I know. Now Kristen's setting bait out on the cabinet for them. laying out food. So when the flies come over to get on the food, I bust them up. That's what you do when you're trying to get down to Texas, but you're trapped in L.A. with obligations and appearances, but you really want to go hunting with your buddy Ted. So I'm killing flies with my bug assault. It's working out great. But, hey, Kristen, thanks for joining me here on the podcast. It's going to be a great podcast today. I'm answering questions that people sent in.
A great podcast.
It's so many good questions. tremendous. So wonderful. They always bring up the kids, the fact that they mention the kid when the candidates are talking about something.
Oh, yeah.
Like that humanizes them. Or I met this old lady, this old couple from...
And their name's Sam and Jenny.
From Dubuque, Iowa.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey, before we get to the body of this podcast, if you're looking for a little action on some of this weekend's football games, then get yourself to betdsi.com. Use my promo code Austin25. That's Austin and the number 25 with no space. And get $25 free when you register. And, hey, don't worry about playing with BetDSI. They're one of the original online sports books. Been around for over 20 years. They set a lot of the lines you're already playing on, and more importantly, they pay. They built a solid reputation on payment of winnings. They take professional and novice action, and BetDSI.com is really quick and easy to use. You can play from your computer or from your phone or tablet. They even got live betting. So if things aren't going your way at halftime, you can place another bet to try and cover. The site is so trusted that many professional players do their betting here. And right now, like I said, BetDSI.com is offering this beginning of the season special. Just use my promo code Austin25 when you sign up and get $25 free just to try the service. Or take advantage of their 100% bonus on your first deposit. They'll match what you deposit. So go to BetDSI.com and use my promo code Austin25. Austin and the number 25, no space between. Take advantage of their two great offers and win yourself some money. That's BetDSI.com.
Hey, guys, it's Mark Schlereth from The Stinkin' Truth, and I am so excited because football season means not one, but two podcasts every week. Episode one, I always talk about the games that just happened. And episode two, we go game by game with my picks that you need to be on. That's The Stinkin' Truth every week, twice a week. Download it now or subscribe at PodcastOne.com.
Steve Austin, Unleashed.
All right, gang, as John Wayne would say, we're burning daylight. I'm sitting here at my table, Pearl Bear neon clock. I got an orange cold steel broken skull knife sitting right beside me because TSA took my green one at the Reno airport yesterday. They were doing their job. I was too dumb. Shouldn't have had a pocket knife in my pocket while at the airport. Forgot to put it in my luggage. So to you people out there, if you're carrying a knife, put it in your luggage before you get out there. They're going to take it from you. That's what they do. Swig a beer for TSA for doing their job. Anyway, I got this new orange one. I can see it clearly. It's bright orange. My wife bought me 5 of them on my Amazon link the other day. Kick back a little bit of money to the production cost of the Steve Austin Show by using one of my own links. Baddest pocket knife in the world, $75. I've got a brand new orange one, and yes, I paid for it. Okay, I said I was going to answer some questions. My illustrious wife, Kristen, has agreed to come in here and moderate, or ask the questions, rather, because I was reading them to myself over and over and over again while she was in the back room trying to take a little cat nap. She heard me over here fumble fucking around. She comes in here and she goes, "You need help." Kristen, what was your first fucking clue that I needed help, other than the fact I hit the stop and the record button about 50 fucking times?
No, I left the room because you kept on engaging me into the podcast and I didn't have a microphone. And then when I'd say something, you're like, "Oh, you just roadblocked me. Now I got to start over again."
Well, you got to remember in the podcast business, Kristen, this is an old groundlings technique. It's always yes and. So, you know, when you say something, you got to spring forward. You got to give something that don't hit me with a dead end. You got to keep it going.
Okay.
Keep it open-ended. A little trade secret for any of you people up in the podcast business trying to get a little 411 and get ahead of yourself.
I'll do my best.
I can hear Hershey in there licking the food bowls. We just got finished feeding our dogs. And then Hershey does this every damn time. We feed them breakfast and we feed them dinner. We feed our dogs twice a day. And so after
it's a three-course meal.
Yeah. After Hershey and Mula have both finished their dinners, Hershey has to come back and lick both bowls completely clean like there's going to be another morsel of food in there, and there never is.
But now she's figured out how to get to the dog food container when we're gone.
Yeah, she opens a cabinet with a bear paw. We call her, Hershey's nickname is the California Bear because she looks like a damn bear. She's so fucking big. And she opens a cabinet. And the thing about it is, we keep our dog food in a container with a screw-on lid to preserve the freshness. So it's not
and
like
to keep
she
the
can,
bugs out, too.
Yeah, keep the bugs out. So it's not like she's trying to get a bag of food. And just she knows she can't get access to the food, but she still tries to get in the goddamn cabinet.
Yeah. Well, no, one time she did. I have a bad habit of not screwing things on. And I left it open. And when I came home, she was eating away.
You and Lids are just a horrible combination. Every time I pick up a bottle of water that Chris has been using, she'll put the damn lid on it for about a quarter of a turn, and I'll squeeze it like that, and of course water will shoot out everywhere. So, and you've been doing this ever since I met you for 12 years.
Yeah,
you don't put the lid on nothing.
I have a bad. Well, no, I put it on. I just don't put it on completely.
Yeah, please, from here on out, put the lids on completely, and let's go to our first question.
Okay.
Enough with our soap opera.
Okay, so the first question comes from Keith Bauer. And it's a fishing question. He says, what's your favorite type of fish to go after, and have you done much saltwater fishing?
Man, I did a shitload of saltwater fishing back when we was growing up in Edna, Texas. There were two places we went. Predominantly 99% of where we went was Port O'Connor, Texas. Every now and then we'd go to Rockport, down there where Ted Fowler 361 lives. But, man, we'd go out there to Port O'Connor, and we'd go for speckled trout. That's what we fish for. We'd get in some redfish every now and then, some sheephead, some gaff top. Every now and then you get into some sharks. Sharks are good eating. Back in, we was catching sand sharks.
You can eat sharks?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sharks are good eating.
I thought that was illegal.
No.
Oh.
No. I mean, I'm not talking about man-eaters that are 12 feet long.
Oh, okay.
These sharks, you know, anywhere from 2 to 3, 4 foot long.
Oh, okay.
But no, they're real good eating. And you just really start at the tail and you just kind of slice them like into little steaks. Take the fins off. Oh, yeah, they're good eating. But, yeah, so I grew up saltwater fishing. And while I'm on the topic of fishing, someone else asked me a question about what kind of fish we had out there at Broken Skull Ranch. We don't have any fish out the Broken Skull Ranch because when the droughts came the last, you know, 7-8 years, we've had water since. We've got good rain going out there now, but when we were really bad in the drought, we have 5 tanks and they all dried out, and they were full of bass, catfish, alligator gar, some perch, brim, just some other bullshit, but everything's gone at the ranch. So I freshwater fish too, and when I do that, I like to mess with those catfish and I like those bass. But currently at the ranch, we ain't got no fish. Kristen, ask me another question. I'm ready to talk about anything and everything here on The Steve Austin Show.
I was going to lead into the next question. That's my job as the questionnaire.
Oh, okay.
The questioner, whatever my job is, my interviewee, and I'm the interviewer. Okay, so Steve, this comes from Todd Greasley, and it says, hey, Steve, wanted to know if there's any plans in the future to make a Broken Skull IPA a global beer. Living in Australia makes it hard to get my hands on some. Swig a beer for the working man. Cheers, Todd.
Man, Todd, I've been seeing you on Twitter a lot. Appreciate the support. Australia is a badass country. We had so much fun there. Kristen came down when I was filming The Condemned back in about 2007, give or take. And it was absolutely beautiful country, and the water was spectacular. It's a long ways away. We're still trying to get in a few states like Texas, maybe Nevada. I know we went into
Pennsylvania
a while back, maybe making a push to get into Oregon. Man, that'd be a real big stretch to say we're going to get all the way to Australia. I know we've had so many people from United Kingdom, got a big fan base in England, and they're asking about the beer as well.
Can they order it online?
I don't know if you can ship internationally beer, so I don't know the answer to that question. I don't believe that we can, or inside the cellar. I don't think that they can either. If they can, I wish they'd let me know. But, man, it's basically United States, and right now we're really exclusively in California. As the beer keeps continuing to get as popular as it keeps growing, we'll see what happens, but I don't anticipate getting to Australia.
All right, Steve, I'm going to ask you the next question. It says, it's from Miguel Angel Ortega, and he says, hey, Steve, I'm sitting here at work half an hour for the day, and all I can think of what to do is to ask an icon of national treasure such as yourself. Well, after thinking about it and seeing how this is my first question, I'll ask a wrestling question. So here it goes. Steve, how did you feel while you were being sacrificed by The Undertaker on his symbol? I asked because I wonder if at any point did you think, shit, just got weird, LOL.
Man, that was a real interesting day at the office because, I mean, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Undertaker had built this big symbol. It looked like a cross for all practical purposes.
Okay, because I have no idea.
So anyway, how they knocked me out, they put me on the thing, and we rehearsed that one time, just tying me to that crucifix structure, whatever it was, the Undertaker symbol for whatever it was, and I was standing on a little platform. And then my arms were tied to the structure, and so I wouldn't go anywhere. And so my one thought was, man, if the chain breaks, if this thing falls face forward, it's going to be a shitty day at the office because this thing is going to crush me and I'm going to die. But anyway, the gig went off without any hitches. They tied me to the thing. I was standing on the platform. Undertaker knelt down and did that, you know, that pose that he does, and they hoisted that thing up, and it kind of had the purple lights going. It was very surreal. I always hate to use the word surreal because you think, what the fuck does it mean?
You hear it on The Bachelor.
Okay, yeah. we boycotted The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. We ain't watched it in a couple of years. But no, it wasn't like it was weird. It was a very weird feeling because, you know, obviously there was a lot of symbolism there. People equated it to, you know, Jesus Christ on the cross, and that was never our intentions or whatever it was. It was just an angle. I thought it was a cool angle. Undertaker sacrificed me and hanging up there, man, just looking out in the crowd. It was pretty eerie. So I wouldn't say it was weird, but it was very interesting. And then they got me down, and I took a shower and went on to the next town. That's all I can say about it. But it was pretty fucking cool.
All right, well, I have another question from Salvatore. Says, Steve, if another wrestler gives you a stiff handshake, do you really think he's a crowbar in the ring? Conversely, do you give a wrestler a funny look if he gives you that limp worker's handshake I've heard about so much?
Man, I tell you what, these days when you go into a WWE you know, event or a wrestling event, you sink her in deep and just a good handshake and eye contact. The old thing where, you know, if you're in the business and, you know, someone grabs the fuck out of your hand, you're thinking, oh, man, this guy's, he's green, he doesn't know how to work. And so that little bullshit, I call it like a bird perching on a limb, that handshake where you just kind of grab the guy, top of the guy's hand. It's that limp-wristed shit. Now, that handshake don't fly anymore. It's out of style. It was in vogue there for the late 80s going into the mid-90s for a long time, and then just that stiff handshake came back into style, and I think that's what's going on these days. But back in the day, it was kind of a little bit of a code to say, hey, I'm one of the boys. I know the secret handshake.
Oh.
But, you know, no. If a guy shook your hand rough, you just didn't think, oh, my God, this guy's a crowbar. He's going to be terrible in the ring. You can't judge somebody's ability in the ring just based on a handshake. I always like a firm handshake. You hit me with that J-Brone handshake, or sometimes at the trade conventions or at the Cauliflower Alley stuff. I love all those people there, but the gimmick handshake is no longer. It's a real man's handshake.
Next question. The way,
yeah.
I prefer a firm handshake, too. A lot of men and women don't want to give a woman a firm handshake because it's maybe something weird about it. I don't know. I prefer a firm handshake.
I do too. Just like we met some women the other day. We were at a function, and I give them the same handshake I do to a guy. Of course, the grip is just a little less pressure,
right?
But it's still a firm handshake, and I want the same. Like I said, I want a firm handshake back. You're on the same page. That's my welcome. That I've extended my handshake, and so have they. And you know, good. You know, that. You mean it.
Equality in the handshake.
Equality in the handshake. Jesus H. Christ on a popsicle stick. Okay, give me a question, Kristen.
So Adam Floyd, he wants to know what your preferred or recommended method of knife sharpening is.
Because he's got a cold steel knife that needs a little bit of an edge on it.
Correct, yes.
Okay, so what I use is a Spyderco Sharp Maker. It's just one of those systems with the ceramic rods. And you place them at the angles. There's a set of coarse rods and then the finer rods. There's many different systems. There's many different makers. I'm sure they're pretty much all the same. But I got a couple of the Spyderco sharp makers at the ranch and here in Cali to keep my knife sharp. Using just an old traditional whetstone, I'm not worth a shit. I will dull a knife very quick. So that sharp maker system makes it almost impossible to dull a knife. And if I can sharpen it, it's easy enough for a caveman to do it. It's easy enough for Steve Austin to do it. That's what I use, croc sticks, to sharpen my knives.
What about my brother's method, which I really like?
That was great because, like, what she's saying is, and most people that live in a country or have a ranch have a grinding wheel or a wheel with a wire brush
on
it.
This is a paper wheel,
though. To scrub stuff. Well, I know, but yeah. You've got to have the motor first with the wheels on it. So you just take one of your wheels off, whether it's a grinder or a wire brush, and you install this other wheel on it. And it's coated. It's like a paper wheel coated with like diamonds, little bitty tiny diamonds, not the kind you'd find at the jewelry store and your girlfriend's earrings. He went to Jared's. No, this cocksucker is just a spinning wheel, and you just flip your motor on and put that knife against there and just kind of go back and forth with it. And that son of a bitch is badass. I could probably get a knife ready for surgery using that system, but that's on my wheel on the grinder bench at the ranch. So answer the question. Croc sticks, Spyderco, Sharp Maker is a good one. So got to take a minute to say thank you to the great sponsors who let me do this podcast for you free twice a week. And that includes DraftKings, the destination for one-week fantasy football. And here's why you should be playing fantasy football at DraftKings. You ain't got to worry about poor performers taking up a spot on your lineup or even a place on your bench. I'm talking about players like Rams running back Todd Gurley or Eddie Lacy of the Packers. You can pick up a hot quarterback like Dak Prescott on the Cowboys and put him to work on your one-week lineup. You won't be up at 2 in the morning on Sunday trolling the waiver wire looking for someone to replace your latest injured player or whoever has a bye week that you forgot about. At DraftKings.com, you're never out of the money. And if you use my promo code UNLEASH, you can play for free with your first deposit. And this is a good weekend to do it because DraftKings is hosting another huge fantasy contest with over $1 million in total prizes up for grabs. So get to DraftKings.com now and choose your players for this weekend's contest. And if you use my promo code UNLEASHED, you can play for free with your first deposit. That's promo code UNLEASHED to play for free for your share of over $1 million in total prizes this weekend. Only at DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See website for details.
All right, Steve, this is from, Mark Van Marley. And he's from Liverpool, England, and he wants to know your thoughts on the internet rumor of HBK versus AJ Styles.
Man, I tell you what, I thought when I first saw that, I was thinking, man, it looked like Sean decided to break out of retirement and work with AJ Styles because I knew there's a lot of respect from AJ Styles to Shawn Michaels. I know he was a huge influence on him, and he reminds me a lot of Shawn Michaels. So I think it'd be an awesome match if it were to happen. But I Shawn could have one more in him. Certainly if he says he can, it'd be, a five-star match with those two guys in the ring. But I just think when Shawn said he was done, I really think he meant he was done, and I don't think we'll ever see him in the ring again. So, therefore, if he does make a return and it's against AJ Styles, I will be flabbergasted and I will be tuned in to watch the match because there's only one Shawn Michaels.
All right. Well, I think this guy's name's pronounced Darren Presley. It's just an odd spelling. It says, hey, Steve, I've been a huge fan of yours for all my life, just recently turning 21. I was wondering, is your beer going to be available in stores in Texas anytime soon? I listen to your podcast twice a week and have never really heard you cover it, so my apologies if you have.
Man, we're talking about trying to get into Texas, but for some reason, some of the, I don't know exactly what the terminology is, it costs a lot of money to get into Texas. So we're making some progress. There's some other states that I think that are a little closer. Obviously, I'd love to go to Texas because that's where, I was born and raised. And it'd be great to have the best IPA in the USA and the great state of Texas. But we're working on it. It's a work in progress. If other states turn up to be a little bit easier to get into, then maybe we'll go that route. I don't want to speak too much on that because Rob Croxall, the owner of El Segundo Brewing Company, knows way more about the distribution stuff than I do. We formulated the beer together, and it turned out to be just totally awesome, to be very frank with you, and I'm very proud of it. So it'd be great to get it to Texas. Stay tuned. Next time I see Rob, I'll get some more information on our expansion efforts.
All right, this one's from Dylan Schroeder. Loves the podcast, helps him get through the week. What are your thoughts on the Goldbergs' return to the WWE?
Man, I love it. I was over at Bill Goldberg's house a couple of months ago. And as long as I've known Bill, we never really knew each other. And the time I spent at his house, day and a half, ended up spending a night. We started drinking beer. One thing led to another. Got 4 hours of conversation out of him, which was incredible. Saw all of his great cars and his wonderful wife and his son, Gage. To see him pop up on TV the other day and to see that crowd take him in, see how emotionally moved he was by that, because when you've been in the business for as long as Bill was and you get away from it, you think people done forgot about you. And, man, when that roof blew off the place, those people came unglued and they was yelling the Goldberg chant, I thought it was awesome. Consider Bill Goldberg to be a very close friend. We don't have to talk very much, but I was glad to see him back. I'm looking forward to seeing the match that him and Brock Lesnar are going to have, because we've got to hear from, what day of the week is it, Kristen?
Today's Wednesday.
Hell, I missed Brock's response this past Monday on Raw, so I guess I missed out on that. I need to watch my DVR. To answer the question, it was great to see Bill Goldberg back in a squared circle. I look forward to seeing the match. You gotta understand, when Bill was super over back in the day, as I was super over back in the day in the WWF, he was WCW, we were both kind of running parallels. Now, he was having those tremendous squash matches, and his people were just going crazy to get into their arenas to see him. You know, I was doing my thing, having, some classic matches with a bunch of badass workers like Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, Mick Foley, Triple H, Rock, all those guys. So we had different kinds of runs, but he was super hot. And when he came into WWE, the window just never really opened up for Stone Cold and Goldberg to go at it in their prime when they were both at their most over points. So long-winded answer. Glad to see him back. I hope him and Brock have a knockdown, drag-out match, as those two badasses should.
All right, this one's from Alex MG. Says, other than the Originator, you performed the best Thez press I've ever seen. When did you first begin to use the move, and who or what gave you the idea to add it to your moveset?
Hey, you know what? I've seen a lot of people borrow the Luthez press, and a lot of them borrowed it from me because I was the last guy they saw do it. The Thez press, obviously, I believe was invented by the one and only great Luthez, but I never really got a chance to see Luthez wrestle. But who I did see wrestle and who used it effectively on me many times in my formative years down here in the USWA was the one and only superstar Bill Dundee from Australia. And I borrowed the Thez press from Bill Dundee after I left the USWA territory. I wasn't going to use it while I was still there because that was one of his signature moves, and Bill could do a lot of things. And it was really interesting that Bill, at his height and weight, didn't really work a cruiserweight style. He worked a pro-style match, a main event-style match, as I call it. But I got the Thez press from the one and only superstar Bill Dundee. And when I say superstar Bill Dundee, that's a guy that drew money in the Memphis territory, and that's a guy, to me, who ought to be in the Hall of Fame.
Okay, this one's from Roddy. He says, hey, Steve, me and my brother were and are still massive fans of your career and the podcast all the way from Scotland. I'm just sitting here catching up on the Cavs-Knicks game and the Warriors-Spurs game from last night. Are you talking so much about football in your high school, college football days, but did you ever play any basketball?
Yeah, man, I played basketball. I played basketball in junior high, in seventh grade and eighth grade. And I remember I started.
Picture it.
Well, that's why I stopped.
Okay.
in junior high, you want to play all the sports that you can.
Right.
I ran track, played football, baseball, all this stuff. Well, I was in Little League back then. We didn't have organized baseball. So I played basketball. But once I got in high school and, really started taking football seriously, and I knew I was a running back at the time and also played linebacker, and I threw the discus. I played baseball. I didn't see a whole lot of future for me playing basketball. I was 6 foot at the time. I ended up being 6'1", 6'1 and a half. I couldn't jump that great. My shot wasn't that great. My rebounding skills weren't that great. I just wasn't a great basketball player. I wouldn't even say I was a good basketball player. And I consider myself to be a pretty goddamn good athlete, and I could do almost any sports you can train me to do. But these days, now, if we're shooting hoops or something like that, or playing like a game of pig or horse or whatever.
Horse.
You know, I can play something with a real long name so I don't get beat. I enjoy shooting hoops and just doing stuff like that. But I stopped playing basketball in high school to focus my efforts on the sports that I was strongest at.
You know, I'm going to get you a basketball hoop for Christmas.
Man, I tell you what, I love it, but our goddamn driveway's so low, where are we going to put the motherfucker?
I'm going to get you the little tiny tot one so we can put it in the grass.
No, you know what we're going to do? We're going to drill a hole. No, we're going to pour ones. I'll put it out there at the end of the driveway in the street.
Yeah, I'm going to get you a short
one. All these people that play basketball and shit in the street, no one ever, you know, cars drive by and kill me or something.
Anyway, I want to give a shout out. He also says, big fan of the podcast with Teddy Fowler. Guy sounds like a character.
He is a character. Ted Fowler 361 is going to be coming on the podcast. You're going to be getting a gut full of him when you get down to South Texas for deer season. I've got an event in mid-November, Kawasaki convention. This is 50 years Kawasaki has been in the United States of America. And so it's going to be a hell of a convention going on out there in Palm Desert. We're going to spend about 5 days out there. And as soon as I get done with the Kawasaki thing, we're going to load up and head down to Texas where my Kawasaki Mule Pro FXs will be waiting on me to jump on them and go deer hunting. And you will hear Ted Fowler 361 on a bunch of podcasts.
Probably every week.
Probably every week. And we're going to be doing a lot of bullshitting, a lot of working, a lot of hunting. And the place needs a lot of mowing. So there'll be plenty of stories coming from Ted Fowler.
All right. Well, this is a question from John Dean. He has a CPAP question. He says, I'm a CPAP user, just like you are. Do you use any gimmicks to keep the marks limited on your face? I use a nasal soft cushion for the bridge of my nose, and I also use snuggle straps for the sides.
Hey, man, I know what you're talking about. Sometimes when your gaskets on your mask start getting worn out and they kind of start losing that compliance or they just start to change, they start to wear out. And so you really got to strap that mask on tight. And then it gets uncomfortable and leaves all those fucking creases in your face.
You always have marks on your face.
I know. I got marks on my face every morning when I wake up. I'm lucky I've been with my wife for 12 years. I'm not on the single scene, and I don't give a fuck. The doctor told me to wear my CPAP machine, so I do. I don't sleep without it. But the best thing is, you don't have to replace that full mask. You can just get the gasket, and it's a lot cheaper to replace because I'm real bad about using these masks as long as until they fall off, literally. So just get you one that fits and keep your gaskets fresh. And then there's nothing I can tell you because I don't use any of those strips that you're talking about. I wake up with marks on my face, and that's just the way it is.
And it takes a good
and
hour.
And here's a quick CPAP technology tip. My brother-in-law just got diagnosed with sleep apnea. He got this, you know, fancy machine. But the problem is, you know, when you exhale, you're blowing out. And that CPAP is blowing air in. And so if you don't have the passive one that stops blowing in when you breathe out, you've got two forces of air, coming together, which will blow that mask off your face. So I don't know what it's called, whether it's a passive CPAP or whatever, but when I exhale, my unit stops blowing. And then when I inhale, it starts blowing again. Before, when I had the kind of caveman type sleep apnea machine, it just was constant pressure. Because of the shape of my face, you get those leaks where it shoots that air into your eyes or off your mouth or over your cheeks, and it just fucks you up. I know you know what I'm talking about. So anyway, get you the kind of CPAP machine. It's an upgrade, and they're all expensive, $600 to $1,000, but it's money well spent to get the passive one, which will allow you to breathe out, not against the machine, so it works with you and not against you.
All right, this one's from Nate Bissell. He says, hey, Steve, what is or was your favorite venue or city to hit while on the road? Any good eat spots we should be trying?
No, man, just for events. You know, Chicago, that building was unbelievable. So I love Chicago. I didn't necessarily love the traffic in or around Chicago. It's a beautiful city. I love the architecture. I love the sports fans are absolutely crazy. They're wonderful. I loved running in the South. I love Texas. For some reason, Jacksonville, Florida, that old arena, that Coliseum they used to have down there was fun to run. Some of those towns down there in Dothan, Camp Lejeune, the hottest building I ever worked on that military base down there. I can't say that was my list of favorites, but it was great to go down there and entertain the troops. But the West Coast stuff was cool. Stuff in the Midwest was cool. I like being in the southern states. I love Louisiana, Texas, Florida, Georgia. South Carolina was cool. North Carolina has some great wrestling stuff going on over there. Did I mention Atlanta? Yeah, I kind of prefer that southern region. Other than you got your hot spots with the Garden, of course, you know, those shows in Jersey. LAX was or LA was cool. You had a couple of good shots out here. South was my favorite region.
What about food stops?
Food stops, man. Okay, that's when you go back to the South, because a Cracker Barrel is a pretty good stop. IHOP is a pretty good stop.
You love the food in New Orleans.
IHOP, I know, but the best stop, because they're not everywhere, is Waffle House.
Oh, okay.
And you got some pretenders out there, some of those different ones. Huddle House is average.
Do we have a Waffle House here in California?
I don't know. I don't think we have Waffle House in California, but that's one of the things. In those southern states, you always have Waffle House, and they're very consistent, and you can eat clean food there, or you can eat dirty food there as well. But it's just 24/7. Waffle House is the same wherever you go.
All right, Steve. This is from Sean Myers, and he says, were you a fan of the Disturbed version of your theme song?
Yes, I was a fan of the Disturbed version of my theme song. I thought those guys did a great job, and it's hard to believe those guys are still around and still kicking ass and still making good music. I was just talking to Juanita Strauss, the guitarist for Alice Cooper, came by. Her boyfriend Josh says those guys are still out there crushing it. And Dave Germain, with a unique voice and singing style. And so they're still kicking ass, and I enjoyed meeting them, working with them, and I thought they did a great job on my theme music. But I always preferred the classic, that original, that glass breaking, that siren going on, stuff that Jim Johnston wrote.
Another prop for Teddy, he writes, can't wait to hear you and Teddy's Honey Camp shows from the BSR. That was from Sean again. So
there's going to be a bunch of them. You'll probably get sick of Ted Fowler 361, or Norm Pattis is going to have him on his own podcast and call it the Ted Fowler 361 show.
Maybe quit construction. Okay, Steve, this one's from Ollie Rowell. Hello, Steve. Massive fan all the way from the UK. Hell yeah, how's the shoulder? I was just wondering about how are wrestlers trained on the road and how it varied from person to person. So when someone says wrestling shape, what does that actually mean?
Well, first of all, the shoulder's coming around. I stopped trying to increase my weights because my doctors told me to slow down. So I stopped. I'm still training, but I'm not trying to increase the weights for another month or two. I'm at the 7-month mark. And about 8 or 9, I should be good to go to really start putting more weight on the bar. And I'm still trying to recover from the atrophy, even after all this time. It's taken a long time. As far as training, just talking about wrestling shape means, like, if you were just to go get in the ring, you're not in wrestling shape. Because when you start hitting those ropes, kicking, stomping, wrestling, trying to work a hold, static pressure, trying to establish a hold, you blow up like a motherfucker. So wrestling shape just means, you know, if you've had a layoff, it's going to take you about 2 to 3 months to get back in wrestling shape. The cardio supply that you need to go out there and shine a guy up, get heat on him, fly for his comeback, and go home. Not go over there, shine a guy up, lay in a rear chin lock because you're gassed out, then barely flip-flop and fly on his comeback, and then go home. You got to be able to go out there and go. When that bell rings and you've got, whether it's 10 minutes to 45 minutes to entertain those people, you cannot entertain them if you're sucking wind. Being in wrestling shape means you're ready to go.
All right. Well, that's interesting conversation.
Well, it's the same thing as just like as someone in the octagon, in MMA world.
I just don't understand half the words you're using.
Oh, yeah. Well, but
it's wrestling talk, so I don't know anything.
But it's just, it'd be the same, like, you know, if a guy was, you know, training for MMA, but not necessarily sparring every single day, all of a sudden, man, you know, by the time they go to camp, they're in fighting shape. And fighting shape would be the same as wrestling shape.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, this one is from Andrew Santoy. He wants to know your thoughts on putting pineapple on pizza.
I disagree with putting pineapple on pizza because I think the question was pineapple or fruits on pizza. I don't think they belong. It's just I've had a couple of pieces of pineapple pizza just to be open-minded and give it a chance. Ain't a fan. I'm a big fan of the pineapple itself. I dig that. Just don't put it on a fucking pizza. And you wouldn't do the same with an apple, a cherry, a grape, a banana, a piece of orange, a kiwi fruit. A strawberry? Did I say that yet? You wouldn't do it. Fruits don't belong on pizzas, and that's the bottom line. And speaking of bottom lines, I'm going to take a pause for the cause right now. Got to take care of one more sponsor who also happens to be a close personal friend of mine, Diamond Dallas Page and his DDP Yoga. Swig of water for Dallas and all the lives he's changing with DDP Yoga. Y'all know that DDP Yoga has changed thousands of lives, including the lives of some of your favorite pro wrestlers like Jake the Snake, Scott Hall, Mick Foley, AJ Styles, and Kane. And DDP Yoga can change your life, too. And believe me when I say, Dallas has made it real easy for you to get on the program. His new DDP Yoga Now app means you can do DDP Yoga anytime, anywhere. And you can do it right from your phone or your tablet. And the app has a lot more than just the workouts on it. By connecting to a Bluetooth heart rate monitor, you can track your calories and heart rate in real time. You can track your pain, measurements, and progress photos too, all for free in the app. And like I said, you've got tons of workouts to choose from. The original DDP Yoga workouts, the new 2.0 workouts, and weekly live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center. And to make it even easier than he's already made it for a limited time, you can get the DDP Yoga DVDs for 15% off, plus 3 months of full access to the DDP Yoga Now app. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin. That's ddpyoga.com/Austin to take advantage of this great deal. Commit now. Change your life now. Go to ddpyoga.com/Austin to get started. If you're looking to buy a car, then you need to check out TrueCar.com and the TrueCar app. TrueCar makes car buying easy, no matter if you're looking for a brand new or used vehicle. There are over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. And there are over 11,000 TrueCar certified dealers. And TrueCar lets you get upfront pricing information on new and used vehicles and lets you see what other people paid for the car you want so that you feel confident you're getting a fair price. With TrueCar and their TrueCar pricing curve, you see what other people paid for the car and you lock in your guaranteed savings. Then you can connect with the local certified dealer of your choosing, take them your TrueCar Guaranteed Savings Certificate, and make your car buying experience quick and easy. Over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Steve Austin, Unleashed.
All right, here we are, Kristen, back in action. You got any more questions for me? Because these fans sent them in. I want to know what they want answered.
Well, I'm trying to go through them and read them. Okay, this one's from Jace Walsh, it looks like. He says, hey, Steve, I don't know if you know any of this, but I figured I'd ask anyway. Do the announcers know who is going to be entering the Royal Rumble matches? It's a question I've always wondered. Thanks.
Yeah, man, I'm pretty much sure that those guys got a list in front of them of, you know, who's coming in at what time, just because, you know, they got to know who's going to be coming out. They'll act surprised and everything like that. But there is a list in order, and those announcers will have it. They're stringing you along and, you know, taking you for a ride on the story as they're speculating as to who could come next. But make no mistake about it, it's 2016. They know who's coming out next.
All right, this question comes from Seth Cross, and he wants to know, what happened to Tommy the Tomato Plant?
Tommy the Tomato Plant, the damn tomato plant, it almost got me divorced about 3 years ago. Man, we threw that little motherfucker away. He dried up. He stopped making tomatoes.
And then the animals were eating it.
The animals came out there and were eating him. And, like, when you think, okay, Steve, you live in Los Angeles. What kind of animals got into your little bitty backyard or little bitty front yard and ate the, what do you think, was a possum?
No, I think it was a squirrel.
Squirrel, yeah, it's squirrels. It was eating on Tommy Tomato. And I remember that one time Kristen took a trip, and I was supposed to water the sumbitch. And then, of course, I got yelled at because I didn't water the goddamn tomato plants. Anyway, we've had subsequent tomato plants every year.
I plant them every year.
Every year, my wife and I go to Home Depot, and she picks out her tomato plants, and we bring them home, and then we eat the tomatoes for a couple of weeks. And then,
well, I got jalapenos this year as well, and green peppers.
How did the jalapenos do?
Really good. I couldn't eat them fast enough.
How were the peppers?
Delicious.
How come I didn't get none? You hogging them all?
I had to give them away. I had so many. Green peppers are very easy to
but here's something.
Grow.
They're talking about, you know, we just got finished going to Reno. We didn't get a chance to see your brother-in-law, but you really enjoyed feeding those
my
chickens.
My brother.
Yeah. Oh, your brother.
Yeah.
you really enjoyed feeding those chickens.
Yeah.
So what if we moved down to South Texas permanently and we got you some chickens that you could feed?
I would like that. It was fun to watch them eat and throw the little feed over there and they get all excited. And then you go in the little thing and the, you know, with the, where he keep the egg, they lay their eggs. I open the little container and scoop out all the eggs and then I cooked them for you for breakfast.
Yep. The fresh eggs right off
fresh
the damn,
eggs.
Right out of the damn chicken's ass.
But I liked my brother's eggs better than Ted's chicken's eggs because Ted's chicken eggs look funny to me. I don't know why. I think it's a different type of chicken.
I think it's
got.
A different type of chicken.
Yeah, so.
Ask me another question.
All right, next question is from Gwendolyn, and she says, I have a few questions. When WWE uses things to pour on people, what exactly are they using? Was that real blood Kane poured on you that time? Was it the mud made out of that came out of Stephanie or Vicky, for example, got pushed into? What was the beer truck you drove or the milk truck Kurt drove?
Well, okay, let's start with the blood that Kane poured on me. That happened in Austin, Texas at the Frank Irwin Center. You know, it's so funny that I've forgotten so much about my career, but there are certain things that I remember vividly. But anyway, Kane came out there and he put that little gimmick microphone thing up to his throat and then used the other microphone. And it just had this wicked sound to it and basically said, Austin, on Sunday, this blood will be real. Something like that. Anyway, it was awesome. But what they poured on me was food coloring and like a maple type syrup with food coloring. Looked exactly like blood. Probably a lot of the same properties. Obviously, it wasn't blood. It was food coloring and syrup.
Well, you remember that movie you did and you had that weird like motor oil all over you? What was that? Was that motor oil?
Yeah, it was motor oil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was dirty weight. As far as some of the mud and stuff that people get pushed in, I don't know. Some of the stuff that Stephanie's flopped around in or something, I don't know what they use for that other stuff. On the beer truck, the first 30 gallons of that was beer, and then it turned into water. And then when Kurt used the milk, as far as I know, that was probably real milk. I don't know anything about the milk truck. I remember getting sprayed by the milk truck. I don't remember how they made the contents.
All right. Funny, this is from Richard Robles. He wants to know, why don't you just tell the gardeners to leave when they come in with their blowers? Tell them you're a global icon and a national treasure.
Well, I'm telling you, they really surprised me today. They got here like 11 a.m. I've been trying to do this podcast all damn day long.
Yes, you have.
So anyway, man, I'm a creature of habit. I know that they're going to show up about the same time I'm cutting my podcast because I do it about the same time every Wednesday. And today they caught me off guard, but yeah, I'm not going to go tell them, hey, man, get out here. I'm trying to do a podcast. I should work around them. I'm just too stubborn and stuck in my ways just to change my schedule around.
All right. This is from Fred Dawson, and he's been a fan for many, many years, but he wants to know how to get your beer in Canada.
I'll get it in Canada. And Canada's just, right next to us up there north. Love to have our beer in Canada. Don't know about getting into another country. I don't know if Inside the Cellar can ship over there, but anyway, we're doing our best to grow the beer, and it's great to see that there's a demand for it in Canada. If any of you people ever come from Canada to Los Angeles for a vacation, stop by 140 Main Street in El Segundo and grab your glass before you go back to the Maple Leaf. Next
right.
question.
I think we got all the questions.
No, that wasn't all the questions.
Okay, well, this is not really a question. He says he was recently listening to your podcast with C.T. Fletcher, which motivated him to get back on the weight loss regimen. He said he lost 25 pounds. His name is Kyle. And he just wanted to say thank you for having him on your podcast, and he enjoyed listening to C.T. Fletcher.
Well, hey, man, I always enjoy talking to C.T. Fletcher, and he's one of those guys that can motivate you just by talking to you. And he's a real cool guy, and what a story C.T. Fletcher has. One of the nicest guys in the world. I'll probably go over to Iron Addicts Gym here in the next couple of months and talk to C.T. again. He keeps me motivated. And I always like what he said last time I was over there. He goes, stone cold. He goes, I got a low tolerance for pussies, meaning people that ain't training hard enough. So it sounds like you're training hard enough, and C.T. Fletcher is a great motivational guy. I look forward to talking to him again. Okay, just found some more questions I had bookmarked over here for Kristen to read. Kristen, fire away.
I'm doing my best.
Doing a hell of a job.
I wouldn't go that far.
Don't be so hard on yourself.
All right. Okay. Well, here's a question from Chris Scott. He wants to know about trophy hunting. He says, I know you enjoy hunting, fishing, etc. Curious to hear your thoughts on trophy hunting. Not hunting deer where you eat the meat, but hunting elephants, rhinos, giraffes, and so forth, just to have a trophy.
Hey, man, I tell you what, to each his own. I respect anybody that, you know, has their own opinion. But for me, man, the elephant, it's cool to see those things walking around, you know, National Geographic or in Africa or wherever they're from, India. I just think an elephant's a cool-ass animal. I wouldn't want one on my wall. I just think they're very majestic, and they belong out there in the wild doing what they do. They're incredible animals, very smart, very good memory. Boy, I tell you what, they can raise hell when they want to. When those people try to herd them around with them little sticks, if they don't want to go somewhere, they can beat the fuck out of you. You know, they talk about, you know, I've read some of those guys in, you know, in the tall grass going out there in Africa and, you know, shooting those things and, you know, from within about 10 feet away from them. It's probably pretty scary because if you're that close to an animal, they can, like an elephant, they could do a lot of damage. For me, though, just not a fan. That's not an animal I'd want to kill. We talk about the rhino. The rhinos are just so cool looking with that fucking, I think that horn ivory is actually made out of skin. But that,
I thought it was ivory.
Ivory, whatever it is.
Because people poach those, unfortunately.
Okay, whatever it is. I just think the rhino's a cool-ass animal. I was just never want to shoot one because they're so cool and rugged and badass looking. They'll throttle your car if you piss them off. They'll fucking run right into your car. So they're really cool. I wouldn't want to kill one. A giraffe, to me, a giraffe's just something to look at. They're so goddamn tall with a long-ass neck. Hell, I ain't got a goddamn ceiling tall enough for a giraffe mountain here. We'd have to cut a hole in the goddamn roof, stick his head out, and put a bubble around it. No, man, I'm not a fan of that. If somebody wants to go hunt them, you know, that's their choice. Me, I like my white-tailed deer. Want to go mule deer hunting with my brother-in-law and do a lot of things. But those three animals specifically, I like looking at them on the ground while they're alive doing what they do.
All right, this is from Michael Hernandez, and he's a big fan. And he says, one of my favorite matches was the 2 out of 3 match with Dustin Rhodes. Okay, for the U.S. title back in WCW. Any thoughts on that one?
Man, if I remember correctly, that was probably Halloween Havoc in about 91. I always loved working with Dustin Rhodes. I'll never forget meeting him at the Sportatorium in Dallas, Texas. Dustin is a little bit younger than I am, but he got into business about a year and a half before I did. And, of course, you know, he came in the Sportatorium. I knew who he was and had a lot of respect for him. And he was doing pretty good in the business at the time. And I finally ended up in WCW, as did he. And, man, I tell you what, every night we went out there and tore the roof off the building and just had the best matches we could. And that 2 out of 3 falls match was a damn good match. I believe that was Chattanooga, Tennessee. I believe in that match also. I always refer to the one time at that War Games 92. I got such a good color job. Dustin was on top of me, beating the shit out of me, and he goes, God damn, he goes, good color. And I said, thanks. Well, at that Halloween Havoc match, I was supposed to get color there, but I made my blade too long, and I couldn't dig it in. And basically, I had about 5 scratch marks across my forehead. It looked like a chicken had peeled out on me. It looked ridiculous. But I had made a blade that was faulty and that was not stiff enough to break the skin. So that's what I remember most out of that match. But I always love working with Dustin Rhodes, and I think he's an awesome hand. And as Goldust, one of the best gimmicks of all time.
Wrestling has its own language. Okay. So this is from Alex Mackey. What went into stunning Donald Trump at WrestleMania 23? Was there any practice runs before the show?
No, man, there weren't any practice runs before that show. And Donald didn't even know he was going to take a stunner going into that show. Well, Vince came up to me and he goes, hey, I'm going to go over and talk to Donald and see if he'll take a Stone Cold stunner when it's all said and done. I said, man, you think he will? He goes, well, all I got to do is ask. So he goes over to Donald, and he goes, hey, Donald, this is Stone Cold Steve Austin. You shook my hand. He goes, listen, after the match, you know, you got to shave my head, get all the business taken care of. We'd like for you to take a Stone Cold stunner. And Donald says, well, what is it? And so I proceed to describe what a Stone Cold Stunner is. And immediately his right-hand man jumps in and goes, no, 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 you don't need to do that. You know, just the fact that you're here is enough, and you don't need to go out there. Maybe you're going to get hurt. A million things could go wrong. This guy had a million excuses why Donald Trump shouldn't take a Stone Cold Stunner. Donald Trump and Vince McMahon are friends. Don looked at Vince. He goes, you think it helped the show? And Vince says, oh, goddamn, it'd be great. People will blow the roof off the place, Donald. Okay, I'll do it. Simple as that. I showed him what we're going to do. We never rehearsed it. We went out there and we did it. It was kind of a botch. It didn't come off that good. So whatever you think about Donald Trump is your opinion. My opinion of the guy, from the fact that he threw down and did business when we needed to at Ford Field, and I thought it was awesome of him to do it.
All right. This one's from Christopher Rodriguez. Great show. Thanks. Blah, blah, blah. My question is regarding the Buried Alive match with Undertaker. What happened with the backhoe operator? Looked like he had some trouble, and it was upsetting you at the time.
Man, I'll tell you something about that damn match. I watched that match back briefly before I started answering his questions. Going into that match, I'd been sick for about 30 days. I had some kind of long-lasting stomach virus. I basically couldn't eat, and I couldn't drink. And it was so bad I really couldn't even drink alcohol. And when I say I can't drink alcohol, I'm pretty fucking sick. If you go back and watch that match, as a matter of fact, I'm going to recommend that match at the end of the segment. When I give the go-home cue. It's the Undertaker versus Stone Cold Steve Austin Buried Alive match. So I went into that match sick as a dog. I was about 15 pounds lighter than I usually was. 5 minutes into the match, I tear a muscle in my rib cage, which is excruciatingly painful. Me and Mark are working our asses off. I don't remember where the building was. There's a pile of dirt there, and there's an old-school backhoe there. And at the end of the match, they wanted me to use the backhoe to pour the dirt onto the Undertaker while he would be in a box underneath all the dirt. Well, I can run almost anything, any kind of machinery that you can introduce me to. I've done it before on all the Monday Night Raws, but the backhoe is a very dangerous machine. It can be in the wrong hands. You know, a lot of people think that backhoe, you just sit there and you scoop stuff out with it and you dig ditches with it. But with the backhoe, a lot of time what you're doing is you're using that bucket with spikes on it to break apart rocks, bust open streets or roads or, you know, whatever you're trying to do so that thing can be used to strike. And so if you hit those hydraulic controls, if you hit one wrong lever or do one wrong thing and I crush those guys, It would have been, you know, devastation. So I completely refused to get on the backhoe, didn't want to learn how to drive it, didn't want to learn how to use it because I wasn't going to risk hurting Mark or Kane, I think, because Kane was in the grave with him, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, so because I'm not going to drive the backhoe, we always had to have that big pop at the end, so I bring the backhoe out. Remember, I'm 30 days sick. I got a pull rib muscle. The match was a real ball buster to begin with. We worked our asses off, and now it's over. The guy comes out there. I think he knew how to drive a backhoe, but because there were 17,000 people and we were on pay-per-view, maybe he was a little bit nervous. He was having a hard enough time working the bucket as well. I'm standing there. We're trying to put dirt onto the Undertaker to make it an official burial because it's a buried alive match, to bury him. So then, you know, I got my thumb up my ass. The guy can't drive the backhoe properly, so I grab a manual shovel and start shoveling dirt in. And I'm just trying to pull, you know, make chicken salad out of chicken shit. Yeah. And I'm ready to get the fuck out of there because, you know, it's almost like a Snickers commercial. Not going anywhere for a while? No, I'm not. I got my thumb stuck up my ass. We're trying to go home, and we can't. It's like I say on the podcast, so give me the go-home cue. We had to go home cue. We were just trying to go the fuck home and couldn't. Guy dumps all the dirt on there, and I was mad as a hornet. And if you go and you watch that match right at the very end before we go dark, you can see me tell Earl, I said that motherfucking match was bullshit. You can almost read my lips. I said words to that effect. And that was with all due respect to the Undertaker and Kane. I love working with Undertaker, and I got a lot of respect for Kane. He came out and interfered in the match. But I just knew that it was just a stinker because it was about a 10-minute cover-up job on the end of that match. It was a clusterfuck. I was frustrated, and I didn't want to be there. And that's why I was pissed off at the backhoe driver, who was probably a wonderful human being, but I was not in a good place. End of story.
All right.
You got one more question? For before we wrap this thing up, ride off into sunset.
Did I ask you the question about Barry Windham yet? I can't remember. I'm sorry.
Ask me the question about Barry Windham. Okay, if you did, I'll answer it again.
All right. This is from Steph Melly, and she says, "Hi, Steve. Do you agree Barry Windham was seriously underrated despite his success?"
Well, also going to ask if he should have been a world champion a couple of times. I thought Barry Windham, he was never underrated. Sometimes he gets looked over. But everybody that worked in the ring or was a fan of the business recognized Barry Windham as being one of the best that was ever in the ring. For about a 2 or 3 year run there in his prime, no one could touch Barry Windham. I think Arn Anderson summed it up best on one of the interviews he did a long time ago. It's like if Barry had a hot rod car or a nice truck, a girl, and $5,000 in his pocket, he was a happy camper. So I think Barry loved the business. He was second or third generation wrestler. I know it was second because his dad was Blackjack. But one of the best guys that I ever worked with, and he taught me so many things. I've got scars on my left and right hands from clotheslining him in the teeth, and he should have sent me a receipt back, and he never did. I remember one time we were at an airport, and I'd just gotten into WCW, and Barry Windham was traveling with Pee-wee, the referee, Randy, and Randy's no longer with us. And he says, "Who are you riding with?" I said, "Nobody." He goes, "You want to ride with us?" I said, "Sure." You know, here's a veteran guy with a veteran referee. I'm a new guy of the territory. He's going to show me the ropes. And so when Barry rented a car, he always rented Cadillacs or Lincoln Town Cars. In this case, it was a Cadillac. I had never sat in a Cadillac in my entire life. He goes, "Kid, you want to drive?" I said, "Yeah." So we're driving down the road. I can't remember where we're at. We're somewhere in the south. I think we're based out of Atlanta. We got into the rental car. We're driving down the highway, and Barry Windham was always sitting in the shotgun seat reading a hot rod magazine or a four-wheel drive truck magazine, flipping through the pages because Barry was big into his cars. And I'm looking at all the controls. I'm driving about 65, 70 down a highway, and I almost run off the shoulder of the road, and I jerked the car back on the road because I was looking at all the features that the Cadillac had because I was so impressed. I couldn't believe I was driving a fucking Cadillac. Barry, typical Barry Windham, no sells everything. Never panic. I jerk the car back on the road. He just looks over at me from his magazine. He goes, "Kid, you okay?" It was great. "Kid, you okay?" "Yeah, man, sorry. It's the first time I ever drove a Cadillac. I just tried to look at all the controls." All right, keep it between the lines. And that's my Barry Windham Cadillac driving story. But I thought it was wonderful. He wasn't underrated. He's often forgotten about how good he was. You watch some of those matches, and I've recommended them over the years. There was a couple of matches. There was one 88, 89, and 90. A couple of sick-ass bumps he took over the top rope with Flair. Some classic matches. He was wonderful. You know, he was a real mentor to me. He gave me a lot of knowledge. He took me under his wing when he certainly didn't have to.
All right. Well, that wraps the questions.
Well, I was going to wrap up the questions. And since we got all those questions done, Kristen, any more questions from you?
No, thanks for having me on your podcast.
Well, I want to thank you for helping me on a podcast.
I
know you're going to ask me, have you picked up the dog shit lately? I haven't picked it up yet today. I've been working on the podcast.
Did you take the trash out?
I haven't taken the trash out. And you're going to Zumba tonight, right?
Yes, I am.
Is it Zumba or cardio hip hop or samba?
Tonight's Zumba.
So you like Zumba the best, and then you like cardio hip hop, and then you like samba.
Yeah.
Because samba's the least of the workout ones.
Well, it's a good workout, but it's not as... It's more of a learning technique of Brazilian dance.
What if I was to come to Zumba class with you and participate? What?
You'd stand out like a sore thumb.
What if I came and I was wearing my leg braces that I used to wear when I was wrestling?
You'd be the only guy there, too.
I could run into a wall and maybe get color. She's going to like, okay, you're back into the wrestling lingo.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. I'll drive in with the backhoe.
Yeah.
All right, I'm coming back to close this show. I want to thank my illustrious wife, Kristen, for joining me on the podcast, asking me the questions that you sent in. I actually did this podcast 10 or 15 times, reading the same questions to myself. And my wife came in and volunteered her services because I was struggling mightily. Anyway.
I hope I didn't mess up the questions too much.
No, you didn't mess up questions at all. Tomorrow I'm talking to Kurt Angle. I'm looking forward to talking to Kurt Angle. And I forgot who else I just booked on the show. I've already forgotten, but it was a real cool person that you're going to like hearing from. My memory banks cannot be jarred right now. I can't remember. But I do see an orange cold steel knife in front of me, and it's fixing to be folded up, put in my pocket knife, and I'm going to take these dogs on a walk around the block to get my cardio in. Kristen, my dear, lovely, wonderful wife, thank you. Thank you so much for helping me in this podcast.
You're very welcome.
All right, everybody, give it a go home. Q, it's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do that, I want to say thank you very much to my wife, Kristen, for chipping in on the podcast and helping a brother out. Hey, man, give you guys something to watch. We talked about it during the podcast. If you just go on YouTube or the WWE Network and type in Stone Cold versus Undertaker in a Buried Alive match, I didn't rewatch that match. I just watched the last 5 minutes, the clusterfuck that happened with the backhoe and the driver and me and trying to shovel all the shit on Undertaker and Kane. Anyway, if you want to watch that match, that's the one I was talking about on the podcast. Anyway, tough day at the office. Hey, man, I'm going to call Ryan over at Pro Wrestling Tees tomorrow and I'll tell him to start releasing those new shirts I wore on Broken Skull Challenge. Season premiere is going to be November 13th. Coming up, it's a badass season four. I'm real proud of the season. I'm fixing to start breaking out those shirts sooner rather than later so I can get them all for the holidays coming up. Anyway, the best goddamn IPA on the planet is Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing Company, and you can get it at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California, and if you don't, check InsideTheCellar.com and see if they ship to your state. And anything Steve Austin related, whether it's t-shirts, pocket knives, beer, just go to BrokenSkullRanch.com. You can find all my shit there. You can find me on Twitter, Steve Austin BSR, on Instagram, Steve Austin BSR. I appreciate you guys supporting the sponsors of the Steve Austin Podcast because they're the ones who let me do this for you free twice a week. So big thanks to DDPYoga.com. Go to DDPYoga.com/Austin to get 15% off the DDP Yoga program and 3 months of full access to the DDP Yoga Now app. To DraftKings, go to DraftKings.com and use the promo code UNLEASHED to play for free with your first deposit this weekend. And to BetDSI, sign up at BetDSI.com and use the promo code Austin25 to get $25 free just for trying the service. And, of course, thanks to Amazon. They've been supporting the podcast since day one, and Amazon is the best place to get the Steve Austin Broken Skull Knife from Cold Steel Knives. Just $75 from the most badass pocket knife on the planet. And if you order the Broken Skull Knife through my Amazon links, Amazon will kick back a couple of bucks to the podcast. It won't cost you nothing extra. There's no hidden fees or charges. You can buy whatever you plan on buying to help out the podcast in the process. You can find my Amazon links by going to podcast1.com. clicking on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, and then hitting the Steve Austin Show button. I got Amazon links for Amazon USA, UK, and Canada. So again, just go to podcast1.com, click the Killer Deals button in the top right corner, then click on the Steve Austin Show. Bookmark that motherfucker so you can find it easier. Folks, keep listening. The 60-second AP News headlines are coming up next. Until then, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.